So friends, as already announced, the topic of today's talk is overcoming obstacles. Now, if we do an objective analysis of life, objectively observe life around us and our own life, we find that invariably all of us suffer one way or the other. All beings suffer one way or the other. Pain, suffering, obstacles in life, disappointments, anxiety. All these go hand in hand with life. Where there is conditioned existence, where there is life, there is one or the other form of suffering. We find in the case of Lord Gautama, that once he escapes in the middle of the night, not then, but before that, he goes out of his out of the palace, and sees the life of a normal man in the city, and finds that everywhere he finds sorrow, disease, decrepitude, old age, death. And this is a common experience for all of us. I'll read a small portion from this wonderful mystic book, The Dream of Ravan, where sage Ananta is explaining to Ravan the symbolical meaning of a dream which Ravan had. And a portion of his explanation is very relevant to our talk. He says, I quote, "If we turned," continued the Rishi, "from external nature to what is called the living world, we look in vain for life. Death meets us at every turn. The terrible Yama is everywhere. The whole animal creation appears upon the scene merely to pass away by some form of violent death. To the peaceful herds gazing in the hillside, Yama comes in the guise of the tiger. To the innocent bleating sheep, as wolf or hyena. The snake seizes the frog from his moist bed and drags him into his hole or his crevice among the stones, crushing his limbs in the traction. The hawk pierces with his cruel beak the poor sparrow. The sparrow in turn transfixes or carries off the grub. Bird preys on bird, fish on fish, as it is written in the Mahabharata. The stronger fishes, after their kind, prey on the weaker fish. This is ever our means of living, appointed to us eternally. But man himself is a most terrible incarnation of Yama. He plunges with a savage joy into the thicket of bamboo or sugarcane to attack and slay the boar. He pursues over the plain the timid and graceful antelope. His arrows outstrip his fleetness, and the exhausted creature, that erst bound in beauty and freedom, falls sobbing to the earth and expires in torture. He gathers the dumb and patient sheep and the helpless lambs from the pastures where they bleated in joy, and consigns them to the slaughterhouse. Behold yon porters passing even now the court gate with baskets on their head full of beautiful plumage of the Singhalese cocks gathered from the village around Lanka, sitting happily together, all unconscious of their coming doom. They are bearing them to the camp to feed thy military followers. The festivity of man is the signal of death to the humbler creatures of the earth. He rejoices or wets, and they die as the materials of his joy, victims immolated to his household gods." So, there is physical suffering, physical pain, obstacles to our physical happiness and health. If that is one which comprises of disease, old age, diseases of what kind? Innumerable kind. Every day we find that we hear of one or the other new kind of disease which we had never heard of before. If that is not enough, in the case of man, there is emotional suffering. Animals don't feel that so much. But in the case of man, man has a highly developed emotional nature, and emotional pain is much, much, much more than physical pain. If a hand is cut off, physical pain to a large extent is bearable than the intense sorrow of disappointment, of separation, of betrayal of trust. Emotional pain is much more than physical. And still worse will be the pain of a violated conscience. A strong conscience, it says what is right and what is wrong. We know what is wrong and we still do it and then feel the effects of it. If we hear to that voice of conscience, if one heeds that voice of conscience, then when we go against the voice of conscience, is much, much more intense than the emotional pain which one feels. So all these are obstacles in a way. All these suffering is obstacles to obtaining a life of peace and happiness and contentment. And if you look at disease, any kind of disease, whether physical, mental, moral, it is an obstacle to health. Disease and health. This is an obstacle to health. And it is said, from the point of the view of metaphysician, that this existence itself is a disease. The bhavaroga. Right? Existence itself is a disease. It's not the normal state of the inner real divine man. Now, if this is one aspect of pain and suffering, there is something in us which increases this suffering manifold, and that is the attitude of resentment or non-acceptance of the events of life. When something happens to us, especially when something bad happens to us, when a so-called disaster happens to us, when somebody hurts us, when somebody puts us in a position of disadvantage, when somebody conspires us against us, or when events of life put us in a place where it is troublesome for us to be in that position, what increases our suffering when we are in that position is resentment, non-acceptance of what has happened. The idea behind this is that what is happening to us, especially when something bad happens to us, the cause for that is somebody outside of us, is due to an accident or an event of life for which we were not responsible, or it is due to the alignment of stars which has brought us bad luck. The primary idea behind all these things is trying to find the causes of one's sorrow and misery outside of oneself. When one feels that one is not responsible for what is happening to him, then the pain increases. Resentment. And therefore, with this attitude of seeing problems and the causes of the problems in our life, obstacles and the causes for obstacles in our life outside of oneself, one naturally seeks to palliate these causes, to solve these problems outside of oneself. We have security, we have insurances. If that is one kind, then we go ahead and do various pujas and rituals to ward off evil, to protect us from outside harm. We go consult an astrologer, we follow his instructions and perform various rituals and ceremonies to protect oneself and to ward off evil and to obtain happiness. All this in the light of one who studies the true philosophy of life is folly. All this is folly in the view of one who studies the true philosophy of life. The ancients who understood the workings of the laws of nature said that anything and everything that happens in the universe, any part of the universe, whether visible or invisible, works according to law. Most important point to remember is this: anything that happens, happens according to immutable, unchanging law. We find the workings of law in all the departments of nature. Now, scientists try to observe and record laws of physics, of chemistry, astronomy, and take any aspect of science. There are laws which underlie the workings of universe, and what the ancients say is, it just doesn't end there. This law works primarily in human life also, in the affairs of human life also. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, all creatures act according to their acquired nature. What then can restrain effect? Which means we have a certain character, we have a certain bent of mind, and we act accordingly. We act according to the ideas that we hold in life. We act according to the ideas of right and wrong that we hold in our mind. And once we do, once we act, then naturally effects will follow. What will restrain effect? So this brings to our mind the idea of law. And we find in Dhammapada also, mentioned in many places, but we will consider one such verse from the chapter on evil conduct, where Lord Buddha says, not in the sky, not in the depths of the sea, nor in the mountain clefts is there a place on earth where a man can be to escape the consequences of his evil deed. So we find in Light of Asia also the same thing is mentioned. The law of the universe, speaking of which Buddha says, it will not be contemned of anyone. It is the law. I quote, it will not be contemned of anyone. Who thwarts it loses, who serves it gains. The hidden good it pays with peace and bliss, the hidden ill with pains, unquote. Look at this. The hidden good it pays with peace and bliss, the hidden ills with pains. The hidden ill with pains. So even our thought, even our feelings, as also our words and what we do to others and to oneself, is governed by this law. This law of moral causation. Law of action and its consequence. And further, Buddha says, I quote, it knows not wrath nor pardon. Utter true, its measures meet. Its faultless balance weighs. Times are as naught. Tomorrow it will judge, or after many days. By this, the slayer's knife did stab himself. The unjust judge hath lost his own defender. The false tongue dooms its lie. The creeping thief and spoiler rob to render. Such is the law which moves to righteousness. which none at last can turn aside or stay. The heart of it is love, the end of it is peace and consummation sweet, obey. Very poetic way of explaining the workings of this law of karma, law of action and its consequence. So it's like this, taking an example, let's say tonight we go to the nearby locality and we eat junk food on the roadside, lot of junk food, and then we go home and sleep. Tomorrow morning we have stomach upset. Now assuming that we have forgotten that we ate junk food yesterday, or we remember that we ate junk food yesterday, either case doesn't make a difference, the stomach is still upset. Just because we have forgotten that we ate junk food doesn't mean our health is intact. The causes that we have sown, whether we remember it or not, will have its appropriate effects. So in this life, we may be facing obstacles, we may be facing some circumstance which is unfavorable to us, but the causes of each one of it is invariably sown by us. It's a mathematically precise law. Just because we have forgotten what causes we had sown in the past, which has brought us the fruits which are bitter to taste today, makes no difference. Which, in fact, is one of the topics which we will consider in the next Sunday, which is, why do we not remember our past lives? Anyway, that's a different topic. So, this understanding that anything that is happening in our life, good, bad or indifferent, happens to us only because we have set in motion such causes which has led us into this circumstance. This understanding is very, very much necessary. And once we understand that we alone are responsible for anything that happens to us in our individual life, in our family life, in our national life, our society and the race, whole human race, any effect that we feel, we alone are responsible for it. And unless we have set in motion such causes, consciously or otherwise, there is no way that we could be experiencing these effects. This understanding, when we grasp this understanding, when we attain to this understanding of life, then resentment goes away. There is acceptance. This is exactly what Marcus Aurelius, the great Roman philosopher king, a Raja Rishi of the Romans, he says this in his Meditations. I'll read a couple of paragraphs from his thoughts, which are very, very nice. He says, I quote, "Remove the judgment, and you have removed the thought, I am hurt. Remove the thought, I am hurt, and the hurt itself is removed." Unquote. Look at this. That judgmental attitude is what causes us more pain than the actual pain which we are experiencing. That idea that I am not responsible for this, that itself causes more pain to us than the pain itself. And we see the importance of this when we carefully consider the words of Krishna in the beginning of the 9th chapter, before beginning to expound Rajavidya and Rajaguhya, which is the royal knowledge and the royal mystery. He says, "Unto thee who findeth no fault, So that is the attainment which Arjuna had, which enabled him to receive Rajavidya and Rajaguhya, finding no fault. Fault finding with circumstances, as also fault finding in other people's character, is a big obstacle. And further, let's consider one more paragraph from Marcus' writings. He says, I quote, "Harm to you cannot subsist in another's directing mind, nor indeed in any turn or change of circumstance. Where then, in that part of you which judges harm? So, no such judgment and all is well. Even if what is closest to it, your own body, is subjected to knife or cautery, or left to separate or mortify, even so that faculty in you which judges these things should stay untroubled." Unquote. So, this understanding of not judging and not finding fault with what happens to us and not feeling resentment towards it, comes from the understanding of the law of action and its consequence, the law of karma and reincarnation. This must be understood. And further, this law which we are discussing so much is not a blind law. It's not mechanical law. Like you throw a ball on the wall and the ball bounces back. Mechanical. But this law is not just action and reaction, action and its consequence, but it is wise and intelligent. We saw what Lord Buddha said, that it is a law which moves to righteousness. So there is a grand purpose and a divine end and aim in view when this law of karma works. Let's try to understand this. When the experiences or when the circumstances of life come to us, it comes with the purpose of teaching us something. It's not blind reaction. It comes with a purpose to teach us something. There is a design there for one who can see that. Mr. Crosby says in one of his letters that to the effect that all these circumstances come to increase either your patience or your strength or your discrimination. Patience, strength and discrimination. And if we observe life from a higher standpoint and if we examine our events of life, we find that this is absolutely true. We have opportunity to increase our patience, to increase our strength or to increase our discrimination in every opportunity, every smallest event of life that we face. And so when something comes to us which we did or didn't expect, which is either good or bad according to our personal viewpoint, first thing is we should face it, we should accept it. Which means we shouldn't run away from it. Which means we shouldn't resent it. Which means we shouldn't try to do something to evade it. Like doing a ritual, doing a ceremony, or trying to find out something else which will and trying to escape the responsibility that we have. That is one thing. This is a passive virtue, accepting it. And an active virtue would be the second step, which will be right attitude towards them. It is not merely experiencing that will help us. as much as the right attitude while experiencing that matters. Mere experience is not what will help us. Mere experience with wrong attitude is again much worse. So experience with the right attitude, right frame of mind. So with this, we should also remember that nature is very compassionate. This law of karma is, what did Lord Buddha say? He said that this is, the heart of it is love, and the end of it is peace and consummation sweet. The heart of it is love. It is compassion, absolute compassion, as well as absolute justice, which go hand in hand. So, when something happens to us, it is definitely what we can bear. Nothing more than what a person can bear is given to him. Never. The event may appear to almost overwhelm us, but be sure that if it has come to you, it is for sure that you have the strength to face it. Nothing more than what you can handle is given to you. By these experiences of life, we develop our character. By overcoming obstacles, we develop our character. And once we have developed a virtue, let's say patience or fortitude or kindness towards others, that is never lost. Even after death, we carry it with us. And this is the true wealth that one gathers in life. Strength as well as weakness, virtue as well as vice, both we carry with us to our next life. This is what the yoga aphorisms of Patanjali say. While that root of merit and demerit exists, there is a fructification during each succeeding life upon earth in rank, years, pleasure and pain. Happiness or suffering results as the fruit of merit and demerit, accordingly as the cause is virtue or vice. Unquote. What this brings to our mind is, we ourselves have created conditions for our happiness or suffering. That is one thing. And second thing what we can understand is, by our actions now, today, and by our thoughts and feelings now, we are creating conditions for either future happiness or future suffering. So, we must do better now to have a better future. If we are indifferent now, the future will be indifferent. If we are evil now, the future will be evil. It's absolute connection between cause and effect. If you sow a rose seed, a seed of a rose plant, you cannot expect a papaya tree. Or if you sow a pepper seed, you cannot expect a jasmine flower. Cause and effect. There is a perfect relation between them in all aspects of nature, which primarily includes the life of man. So, Sage Patanjali speaks of mental deposits. It is everything that we are thinking, feeling, speaking, doing, all are go and accumulate as a mental deposit. Just like we work every day and earn our bank deposit, there similarly our actions in life accumulate as a mental deposit, and our life is but a manifestation, an expression of a portion of that mental deposit. This is a very helpful thought from the writings of Mr. Crosby. We will consider a small portion from page number 205. He says, I quote, "Things past are always easier than things present or things yet to come. The past can be judged by relative importance. It is the hollow of the wave of our progress. Whereas the present and the future represent the crest and the resistance felt or feared. Yet if we remember the past, when it was both present and future, held such disturbances which we now see were a waste of energy. We should learn from this to resist without resistance, that too great an expenditure of thought of energy is not wise. When we fight, we are drawn into the swirl of events and passions. So it is best to lean back on the self, which is never moved, and look on at the flotsam and jetsam through which we move. We can look at the very worst that may happen in the same way as we now look back on what has been. Knowing this, when disturbed, we can say, even this will pass away. And wait till the clouds roll by, seeing ourselves in the sunshine and looking at the east of time. I think that practically all that troubles us is unnecessary as trouble, but necessary for experience." Unquote. What a strong idea to have in mind while we are going through the various experiences of life. We have seen many, many instances in our own life. If we look back and see, we will recognize many where we felt that if such and such a thing happens, it will overwhelm me. That is something that I can never bear. And many times we have found that such and such a thing did happen. We did face it. It did come to us. And it did pass away. It didn't overwhelm us. If anything, we came out of it stronger and wiser. So, why do we have all these experiences? We must try to understand that. There is a grand and a sacred holy purpose behind everything that happens to us. Why this universe with so many creatures, so many kinds of creatures, such complex nature that we find around us, so many beings around us, why this? We find answer in the ancient scriptures where it is said the whole universe exists for bhoga and apavarga of the soul, which is experience and emancipation of the soul. Whole universe, visible and invisible, exists only for that purpose, for the sake of soul alone. It is through experience, bhoga, that apavarga can be reached. Without experience, how can you reach emancipation? So there is an obligatory pilgrimage. And by experiencing all this, life is teaching us so much, which is vital for us to learn. It is this whole life, this whole nature is nothing but a school through which we pass. For example, look at the dissatisfaction in life. We have many desires, some of which are fulfilled, many of which we desire to attain, towards which we are working. And we had our past desires which were fulfilled, but we were never satisfied with it. There was temporary satisfaction, temporary happiness, temporary pleasure. But soon the pleasure turned into something else, the events changed into something else. One thing became another, there was change that set in, and then again there is hunger, again there is desire. Like a raging fire which never stops, desire burns in us. And just imagine this, assuming you had all the things that you desired in life, perfect set of circumstances that you want, just imagine it. And even if you are able to reach such a state, you will find that it either passes away and becomes something else, or there is some or the other kind of anxiety, pain, or some kind of disappointment that is always there. The reason for this is that you cannot find permanence in things which are inherently impermanent. Trying to find permanence and peace in things which are inherently changing is foolishness. And our experiences of life, small as well as big, is teaching us this lesson if we observe it. That there is no peace, no permanence in earthly existence, primarily because man is not of this earth. Man is a spiritual being, not a material being. Material things can never satisfy him because man is a spiritual being. Man is of a different nature than matter. Just like, or to recollect the Kannada poet saint Purandaradasa, who said, Allide nanna mane illi bandiruve summane, meaning that my permanent abode is there, I have come here only temporarily. So our permanent abode is in spirit, because we are spirit, we are divine fragments, as Light on the Path said. And this is an experience that we are all having. And Sankhya Karika, first verse in the Sankhya Karika speaks of this, where the sage says that three kinds of pain ever torment man. Three kinds of pain torment man incessantly. And then his immediate recourse is to do something outwardly, some yajna or some ritual, or try to find some solution outside. But eventually, after trying it out again and again and again, he finds, or rather nature teaches him, that even though he finds a solution outside, one, it is not sure to produce result. Two, even if it produces the result that you want, the result will not be permanent. So therefore, he becomes a jignasu, or one who seeks spiritual knowledge. So our experiences of life, all the obstacles that we face, is teaching us that, if we observe it, one of the lessons. And here comes the importance of having the right perspective of life, of the fourfold, of the four noble truths. The last one which Lord Buddha spoke of is Arya Marga, or the noble path which everyone who has to reach the final goal has to take. And the first step in that noble path is Samyak Darshana, which is the right doctrine. Without a study of the principles which underlie life and nature, there's no hope for us. There's no hope for us. I'll read a small verse from Sankhya Karika. Which brings forth this idea very strongly. It says, dharmena urdvagamanam, which is by means of virtue, there is an upward ascent. Adharmena adhastad gamanam bhavati, which means by vice one takes place, by vice takes place the downward descent. Jnanena cha apavarga, and by means of knowledge is release or emancipation. Viparyayat bandha ishyate, from the reverse of knowledge bondage is considered. So by virtue ascent to higher planes, by vice descent to lower planes takes place, by knowledge release is obtained, while by the reverse of it, which is ignorance, one gets bound. So this knowledge of, what is this knowledge spoken of here which leads to dharma? This knowledge is the knowledge of the spiritual man, the spiritual nature of yourself. Which spiritual nature, which spiritual man, Sage Patanjali says, is untouched by troubles, by works, by fruits of works, or by desires. So our innermost nature is that. And we are here going through innumerable lives and innumerable experiences in various conditions only to realize that. A wise man is one who will understand this and sees that his outer life is for the purpose of the inner man within, is for the sake of the divinity within. And with this knowledge, he takes control of his life, and his outward life is not seen from the point of view of the personal man with personal desires. So an obstacle is seen as an opportunity. A favorable circumstance is also seen as an opportunity. Anything that happens is seen as an opportunity to further the end and further the cause of the divine which is within all beings. So friends, let's stop here and we can consider any questions. No points, I'll read one couple of verses from Light of Asia, where Buddha, Lord Buddha shows or advises how while living in this world you should weave a way out of it. While doing all that you are doing as a husband or a wife or a son or a daughter or employee or employer, citizen, while doing all that you can weave a way for final emancipation, not just yourself, of all beings. I quote, dear is the love I know of wife and child, pleasant the friends and pastimes of your years, fruitful of good lives, gentle charities, firm set though false its fears. Live, you who must, such lives as live on these. Make golden stairways of your weaknesses. Rise by daily sojourn with those fantasies to lovelier verities. Lovelier verities. So shall ye pass to clearer heights and find easier ascents and lighter loads of sin, and larger will to burst the bonds of sense entering the path. So from this perspective, higher perspective, as opposed to the lower personal perspective, Shreyo Marga as opposed to Preyo Marga. If we look at what happens in our life and what doesn't happen, we must be thankful if our plans do not succeed. We plan for something, we try it out, it doesn't work out after our best effort. Be thankful that it didn't happen. It may be personally not pleasant for you to face that failure or face the circumstance, face an unfavorable circumstance, but be thankful for it, because the laws of nature are so kind that it won't let those things come to pass if it is not for your highest good. So if your plans don't work, personally you may feel that it's a disaster for you, but be sure that it is necessary for you. What is necessary for your highest good is given. By what? And where is this law? This law is within yourself. There is no law which sits outside like a god and adjusts this and changes that and manipulates this and changes that. The law is deep within you. The highest expression of yourself is that law. So, a very nice definition of karma is given. Good karma is that which is pleasing to Ishvara within. Bad karma is that which is not pleasing to the Ishvara within. It is not the personal standpoint of what is pleasurable for me that matters, but what is required for the progress of that nameless soul within. The outer circumstances are not the actual obstacles. The actual obstacles lie deep within your mind, in your attitude, in your wrong thinking, in the intent of doing something, your intentions and your feelings. There the purity has to be attained. Friends, let's stop here by considering one closing thought from Crosby's writings again. I quote, "When we consider, as we must, that our individual lives stretch back for untold ages and have an illimitable future, and that the present bodily experience is but one small aspect of that great continuous being, we rise above the temporary while acting in it and seeing more of the right proportions and relativities, are less involved or troubled by what may come to pass. This of itself is much to have gained. It gives the steadiness of the warrior in the fight. Forget not this lesson. The spiritual man is in this world to get rid of defects. His external life is for this only. Hence, we are all seen at a disadvantage. Looking at life from this point of view, everything that comes is an opportunity to be taken advantage of by that spiritual man. And in everything, we find that glorious unsought fight that only fortune's favored soldiers may obtain."